University of Calgary. And he's going to tell us about a quantum game theoretic scenario involving the virus.
just read the full title.
Oh, I don't like it when people are there. You can read it in, you know.
Oh, it does have a pun.
About 5 years. There won't be one next week because it's just before Christmas. There won't be one the week after because it's just after Christmas. January the 4th, we're not sure, kind of depends on whether we can get anyone and how many people are around. January the 18th, we probably won't bother because everyone's at QIP. So keep looking out for when they're bothering when they are.
Okay, so the quantum variance measure, which is basically a generalization of quantum data hiding that I'm going to present. Rather than go into detail about the generalities of the scheme, I think it's probably more instructive to see it in action. So I'm going to talk through a very simple little example of a quantum buried treasure game. First, though, just a couple of slides before I introduce the game, setting the background. What is quantum data hiding? It's actually an extremely simple quantum cryptographic protocol, whereby information is hidden in, usually entangled, but in a set of quantum states which cannot be identified by means of local operation and classical communication. So if we have a set of states, quantum states here, rho, that are orthogonal, we can encode classical information into which of those states the system's actually in. But then when we share it amongst a number of parties in a multipartite scenario, it might be that those parties, if they're restricted to only local operations and classical communications, can't actually identify which row they've been given, even though they know it stems from an orthogonal set. And in that specific sense, in that situation, we say that the information we've encoded in the quantum system has been hidden. That's quantum data hiding. So why study quantum data hiding? Well, as I say, it is a primitive quantum cryptographic scheme, and interesting in its own regard for that. But it's also useful for studying entanglement and non-locality in a more fundamental sense, because it works purely on the strength of the distinction between this locally available information and the greater globally available information that's somehow held in correlations between these systems and inaccessible locally. But for all its advantages, it also has a few drawbacks, quantum data hiding. For example, the local parties, Alice, Bob, and so forth, are treated as a collective rather than individually. And what I mean by that is they kind of approach the problem of deciphering the state with just one perspective, constrained by local operations and classical communication. This crazy mathematical constraint. But they're either all in it together, jolly hockey sticks, one for all and all for one, or else in the slightly more complicated secret sharing schemes, they can be divided into teams. And teams are always either good or bad, black or white. What we'd rather have is a scheme where we can actually look not at the perspective of teams or the perspective of the whole number of local parties, but at the perspectives of the individuals, and how they see the information in the system, and how it evolves as the protocol continues. The second drawback with the quantum data hiding scheme is that the information is locally value-free. And what I mean by that is, our only concern when we're looking at the scheme is whether we lose the information to the local parties or not, whether someone finds out what we're hidden or not. That's fine from a global point of view, but it doesn't actually explain why Alice, Bob, Charlie, and what have you are interested in getting the data themselves. And in fact, in most realistic data hiding cryptography situations, it might be slightly more complicated. For example, if the information's got a finite value, like the password to my bank account, sure, Alice, Bob, Cal, and Douglas may be interested in finding the password to my bank account. But for sure, Alice would probably rather have the password to herself than have to share the information with the others, and thereby only get a quarter of my balance. So we'd like some way to describe why these people are actually hunting for the information in the first place. And that's one of the motivations for a very treasured generalization of data hacking. Basically has five key advantages. First of all, it can account for local perspectives, so that as we follow the protocols through, and as we follow them trying to access this information, we see what actually happens to the actual local information as opposed to the global information. It also allows us to ask questions from these parties as to what they would like the protocol to go when their interests actually collide. It models valuable information. What else was it in if it wasn't valuable? It introduces an emergent role for game theory as well. A lot of people have worked over the past 5 years on ways to unify game theory and quantum mechanics, largely because they like the idea that von Neumann worked with both of them, so such fair. But these unifications have tended to be extremely ad hoc and artificial, and haven't actually had any implications for other areas of quantum information theory or foundational implications. Here, the games aren't artificial in a sense, because they're emerging naturally from the more local structure of the information. And finally, of course, the most important advantage, last but not least, we can allow Alice and Bob to be pirates. So, here's how the story works. This is the simplest possible quantum data hiding protocol I can come up with involving pirates. And our hero is this chap here, he's Roger. Roger is a rich guy in the Caribbean. He's acquired a lot of money through perfectly legitimate means. And there aren't any banks in the Caribbean, of course, so he stores it in a large chest, which he's buried somewhere. In fact, the Caribbean is quite small. It only consists of four relatively similar but distinguishable islands. And Roger's buried his treasure on one of those islands. Roger's a happy guy, but disaster strikes when Roger is captured by pirates, specifically Pirate Alice and Pirate Bob, who, being scary and intimidating individuals capable of making all kinds of blood-curdling threats, force Roger to divulge the information as to where his treasure is. But Alice and Bob don't trust one another one iota, and they're not prepared for either of them to be given a complete map detailing where this information is. So they quarrel amongst themselves and argue, and finally agree that, well, it would be fair if they're given half the map each. And then they can just have to cooperate and find the treasure jointly. That's the only fair way to deal with this hostage. So they force Roger to give them half the map each. The map, because there are only four islands, can be thought of as encoding two classical bits of information. As it were, the north-south bit and the east-west bit. And Roger is simply tasked by the pirates to give each pirate one bit of information. Just a few more descriptions for the game. The pirates can communicate only by semaphore, so they're actually sat on different ships. And they're allowed to communicate to their heart's content, but the communication has to be classical. There's no quantum channel between the ships. And there's this complication, which is actually the first divergence from an ordinary quantum data hiding game. Alice and Bob each have time to search one island. If we're going to be honest about looking at the local perspectives of the parties sharing this quantum system, we have to allow them to reach different conclusions as to what the information might be. So that's what this little rule here is going to introduce. Alice and Bob can reach different conclusions about where the treasure might be, and consequently sail off to different islands to hunt for it. So essentially, after reading the map and talking to one another about the map, they make their best guess as to where the treasure might be and sail off to find it. They're only allowed to make one voyage, but then a hurricane is going to come through the Caribbean, or maybe Roger will manage to get some natives to pick up the treasure. They only get one chance to find the buried treasure. They get one island. A consequence of this constraint is that without the map, they're still going to find the treasure half the time, because they can just randomly search half the islands. That's just the way the game works. So the map as it were, only has a value equal to half the treasure, because it only hides the treasure half the time, if it's a perfectly obscure map.
When you say without the map, you mean with all we have the map?
No, when I say without the map, I mean if they completely ignore the map individually. Alice and Bob can say to each other, well, I'll take this island randomly, you take that other island randomly. We'll search half the possible locations for the treasure.
Between the two of them?
Between the two of them, yeah. They'll, individually, they'll have a quarter chance each. But collectively, Roger will lose half his treasure. So the map, as it were, can have a value to the pirates of up to half the treasure. A value to an individual pirate of up to a quarter. Now, we can model this with a little matrix here.
I mean, the value to an individual pirate could be three quarters, right? If that pirate gets it, and the other, if that pirate gets the whole map, and the other guy gets nothing.
Sure.
Is that right? No, it's less than that, because
pirates can cooperate.
Because the other pirate might randomly find it.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Good. That's exactly the kind of consideration that's going to crop up in a second. We can just draw a little matrix here, though, which represents how this game works. With the tick represents the pirate successfully finding the treasure, and a cross represents failure to find the treasure. So if they both find the treasure, pirates have a certain sense of honor. They're not very honorable people, but they don't kill each other on sight. So they'll share it, half each. If only one of them finds the treasure, though, that pirate is going to go home very happy with the entire chest, and the other pirate is going to be left disappointed. And obviously, if neither of them finds the treasure, then neither pirate profits, and Roger's very happy. This kind of matrix can also be used to do conventional quantum data hacking. If we just made this entire row and this entire column full of ones, such that if anyone ever discovered the information, then that would count as a total victory to all the local parties, then that would be conventional quantum data hacking. But the innovation in quantum buried treasure is that we can actually vary these entries somewhat, and thereby model the actual value of this information to the pirates, or the local parties, whatever you term you prefer, contingent on which other local parties also have the same information. So what happens? To make this a bit quantum, Roger somehow, crazily, manages to persuade Alice and Bob to accept qubits instead of bits as their share of the map. He's nonetheless compelled, because pirates are very scary individuals, to tell the truth about where his treasure is. So he's going to encode the information contained on his map into a pair of qubits. But he has a choice to make there. He's got to use four orthogonal two-qubit states. But which orthogonal two-qubit states is he going to use? He has to pick pure states, otherwise it's not going to faithfully convey the information. But he's got a decision to make as to how entangled a basis he's going to encode into. So what happens if he chooses to encode into an unentangled basis? Well, to study this problem, we just quickly have to make some simplifications, just to let the analysis go through easily. Roger's given Alice and Bob this unentangled map, and Alice and Bob have a decision to make. And we're going to simplify that decision into a binary choice. They either measure in the 0-1 basis. Obviously, they're going to want to measure in the 0-1 basis. These are the states they share. And then communicate the result to their fellow pirate by sending a call. Or they measure in the 0-1 basis. They're always going to measure in the 0-1 basis, but refuse to share their information. Now, to make it fair, these decisions are going to be made independently and irrevocably. So they can't wait for their partner to make a decision and then share information with their partner only if he's shared information with them, for example. Once they have exchanged information in this fashion, they can then make their secondary decision as to which island they think the treasure is probably on and set sail to find it independently. But the key point is that this decision has to be, as it were, made simultaneously by the pirates. They don't get to communicate information about the measurement result before they make a decision about whether to share it. And also, they don't get information about their own measurement result before they decide whether to share that information or not. And this simplifies the situation considerably, but there's a complication as well, which is that they have unrestricted classical communication, these parents, with the result that they can coordinate their actions at any point by semaphore. They can reach agreements, they can enter into negotiations. The only problem is, and the complication is, the promises they make to one another are in no sense binding, because these are scholars, individuals here, and they will lie and go back on any arrangement if they think it's to their own advantage. In fact, of course, they are pirates, and hence their entirely rational means. What happens then when we want to give these pirates an unentangled plan? Well, we can start thinking about the four possible. The first stage decision is, do they cooperate or do they defect? And there's four possible outcomes. Either they both cooperate, they both defect, or one of them cooperates and one of them defects. If they both cooperate, Alice and Bob, they're going to exchange information about this system here in the North One basis, which is going to lead both of them to know exactly what state they were given. They can perfectly distinguish these states very easily. They'll both know exactly which island the treasure is on. So they'll both decide to sail to that island, because they're not stupid. They'll sail straight to the island, both arrive simultaneously and have to share the treasure, with a profit of one half each. So if they choose to cooperate, they'll both have an expected gain of a half. If one of them defects, however, although the defector is going to also have the perfect information from the protocol, from know exactly which island the treasure is on, their poor little cooperating fellow pirate is going to be left in the dark. In fact, the fellow pirate is only going to be able to narrow it down to two possibilities as a result of the one bit they can see. So this pirate here, at this point, Alice is only going to get the treasure half the time. She's got to basically flip a coin and sail to the island and cross her fingers. And when she gets to the island, if she gets lucky, she'll find Bob's already got there and is waiting to share the treasure with her. So Alice only has an expected gain of a quarter, whereas Bob has an expected gain of three quarters. Good for Bob. What happens if they both defect? Well, if they both defect, as it were, they're both flipping coins and trying to guess where the island is. They don't have this information. But they can narrow it down to two possibilities. So you might naively think that with probability 3/8, their expected gain is 3/8, because with probability of half, they're going to arrive at the right island. But with another probability of half, they're going to have to share their bit of the treasure with their fellow pirate. But in fact,
are you excluding the possibility of sending false information?
Well, that's this simplification here. If we allow them to send false information, we've got to start worrying about what they know about each other's propensity for lying about information, and it gets very tricky very quickly. So just because the idea of this is to study the simplest possible scenario, there's only two options. There's share complete information and share zero information.
Well, I mean, I don't think you need to include that. You can say, you can just add a third alternative phrase, is tell the truth, lie. I mean, there's only two messages you can send, zero and one, right?
Sure.
So it's a random page.
So
you could communicate like, around a bit.
But they have to know whether the other person's cooperating in order to get the value set.
No, I don't think they do.
Statistically, you can
direct. I mean, it's just like it's like normal game theory there, right? You don't know what the other person's going to do.
Yeah, but when they do it, you know what they've got. So.
Well, that's right. But
if you change it to false information, then the other person wouldn't know what strategy the other guy had played.
So you modify the game slightly to say that after this is all done, they get together and say what they did. I mean, I don't see it. Why does it matter that they don't know what the strategy is?
Well,
they know if they got the credit or not, right? That's what's important.
Yeah, the difference from Bob's perspective, he receives a message one from Alice, is when he receives message one in this analysis, he knows for a fact that Alice did measure and Alice measured one. When he receives a message saying Yahoo sucks from Alice, he knows that Alice measured and she's refusing to communicate.
Oh, I see the point. It's that is that how they react is another choice.
It's a two-stage game. It's the measurements, do they call cognitive effect, and then there's which island do they sail to.
Isn't it a little bit kind of unnatural to exclude the possibility of deception, given that the whole idea of the LLCC separation is that it allows one person to cheat?
Well,
I suppose you just not cooperate.
Again, as I say, the point of this is to present a very simple scenario. I'm sure that it's got a great deal of structure to it. Yes, it's certainly reasonable to consider alternatives where they can communicate false information freely. But then the game theoretic analysis becomes more complex, and that's not what I'm talking about here. I'm talking about the simple case. So you might think that there's a possibility that they'll go to the same island by accident. But in fact, they can adopt a semaphore-based pirate code so that they can avoid any collision. This is a purely classical little code they can run, because this is a purely classical situation. There's nothing quantum about this thing at all. And this is the pirate code. It's very simple. Alice always sails either northeast or southwest, and Bob always sails either northwest or southeast. That way, of course, they're going to avoid arriving at the same island. But it's also entirely fair in the defect effect case. I mean, they're going to break this code like no tomorrow in the cooperate case, but they're allowed to get pirates. In the defect effect case, they're going to stick to this code because it's a Nash equilibrium. And if they were to diverge from the code, they themselves would stand a chance of losing money. You can see how this works because Bob is always sailing to one of these middle two islands, and Alice is always sailing to one of these outer two islands. And if Alice measures and gets the bit zero, for example, she'll always sail to the northeast island rather than the southwest island, because she knows it can't be on the southwest island. The consequence of this pirate code is, in fact, that one of Alice and Bob always walk away with all the money, despite the fact that they haven't shared information. So we can now ask, now that we've studied all four possibilities, what actually happens when Roger, our hero, gives these guys an unentangled map? And the answer is pretty tragic. The pirates don't cooperate with one another, they defect effect. Because regardless of what the other pirate does, you're always better off not cooperating with them. You're always better off keeping your information to yourself. But even though they don't share information, they're always going to find the treasure. And Roger is penniless and adrift in the Caribbean. So it's a very sad outcome.
Just to make sure that I understand it, you allow only one search depth. So so Bob searches just one island, and
that's right.
And Alice searches just one island.
Yes.
So they find the treasure just in half of the cases.
If they search entirely randomly, yes.
Yeah, in the optimal defective effect case.
No, because they're adopting pirate code 1, which remarkably allows them to find the treasure, allows them to guarantee that one of them will find the treasure, even though they haven't shared information.
I think you kept one of the qubits.
It's kind of surprising, in a sense, that they can do this, but they can. Roger might be surprised. Roger might have given them this unentangled map, hoping that they would defect effect, and that he might have a chance of keeping his treasure. If he doesn't, there's no chance. These are clever, rational pirates, and he's left penniless. So, Roger's going to try and be clever now, and he's going to give them a maximally entangled map instead. So he's giving these pirates one of the Bell states, and he's telling the pirates, it's a perfectly orthogonal set of quantum states. I'll give you one qubit each, the Bell states. The island northeast corresponds to 0.0+1.1. Lots of lovely information for you. Go find the treasure. And he's pretty smart, because he knows that the Bell states are locally indistinguishable. And as such, this map cannot be read perfectly by Alice and Bob. So what happens? Well, if Alice and Bob cooperate, we can see that they're going to narrow down where the treasure is to two possibilities. Because they're going to see whether their measurements produce the same result or a different result. So they're either going to be in the five states, which is here, psi 1 and psi 4, or they're going to be in the psi states, psi 2 and psi 3. Once they've found that information out, they can, by semaphore, in a completely unbiased fashion, just divide those two islands up, say, well, Alice will always sail to the north of the two, or will always sail to the more southerly of the two. And with probability 1, one of them will find the treasure. So individually, with probability 1/2, they have an expected gain of probability of 1/2 of the treasure. This is paracode 2. Paracode 2 also applies for the rest of these entries here. So if they both detect effect, they get no information whatsoever from their own measurements. Their measurement just produces a random bit, and they learn nothing about the correlations of that random bit with anything else. So they know nothing about where the treasure might be. But by following this code, when they randomly guess which island the treasure might be on with a probability 1/4 of success, they can at least be sure they're not going to collide with the other pirate searching that island as well. So they have expected a gain of 1/4. And these off-diagonal islands follow the same pattern. So what happens in this game is that cooperate now dominates. It only dominates weakly, in fact, but it's a Pareto optimal Nash equilibrium. So Alice and Bob sensibly adopted the intelligent pirates. There's nothing stopping them directly from doing it. And Roger's again there, tearful and alone, with only his memories of loot to keep him company. The pirates have half again. Maximally entangled map performs exactly as well as a unentangled map for protecting Roger's treasure. So Roger's getting pretty desperate now. But he might as well just try something a bit crazy, try a non-maximally entangled map, which can't really help. I mean, we can plot the amount of loot the pirates are going to walk off with versus the amount of entanglement that Roger uses in constructing the map here. And we know for a fact that if he doesn't use an entangled map, the pirates are going to walk off with all the loot. And if he uses a maximally entangled map, they're going to walk off with all the loot. Of course, this axis only goes for a half, because the pirates, even without a map, are always going to steal half of Roger's treasure. That's just the danger of piracy in the Caribbean. But along this axis, we can just plot entanglement as a factor of the parameter beta here, where beta is always smaller than alpha, which runs from zero in the product state case to a half in the maximally entangled case, this always being an orthogonal set of two cubic states. So what happens to the pirate's profit margin? This happens. Which is kind of odd. As the map gets more and more entangled, the amount of money the pirates can make by reading the map decreases, which you might kind of expect, because the map's getting more and more indistinguishable. It's a bit odd, given that we know this endpoint is here, but the map's getting harder and harder to read. It's more locally indistinguishable. It's worth less and less money. But when it reaches this critical threshold, where beta squared equals 3 cents, suddenly, there's a catastrophic strategic shift. And the entanglement of the map stops protecting Roger's treasure. In fact, it leaves it completely exposed for this entire finite region of near maximum entanglement here. We can actually break this map down into 3 different zones, because it represents 3 different kinds of gain, depending on the entanglement parameter beta. If Roger gives you a map in this zone here, it essentially behaves in exactly the classical manner we were looking at earlier. So this is the classical zone where defect effect dominates. But defect effect is Pareto optimal. It's the best the pirates could ever hope for jointly. So they're relatively happy walking away with this much money.
Sorry, is there a typo in that matrix?
No.
Oh, I see, okay. So it's correct that cooperate, and defect are the same.
Yes, that is correct.
Okay.
Because defect is Pareto optimal, exactly as it was in the
point is that that defecting and the other guy's cooperating is better, so that's why.
So that's why they want to adopt the defect. Yeah, exactly. But it's that's why this isn't prisoner's dilemma. Because yes, they do get trapped in defect effect, but they're happy to be trapped there because it's every bit as good as cooperating. In the other extreme zone, the entangled zone here, we get exactly the same structure we observe for maximally entangled states, where there's a weak domination by cooperate, because it's a Pareto optimal Nash equilibrium, and you can't do better by defecting when your opponent cooperates. So you can't do better by defecting when your opponent defecting. So there's every reason to cooperate to this state. And thus, Alison will walk away with a half the money. In this middle zone, though, we actually get genuine canonical prisoner's dilemma, where they're still trapped in the defect zone here. But at the entanglement one-third point, there's a strategic shift in all the other strategies. They're still trapped in this zone, so they don't really notice it, and the graph doesn't notice it. The graph just goes straight through. But every other possible strategic outcome, cooperate, and cooperate-defect, radically changes payoffs, such that cooperate becomes great. It's Pareto optimal. It's just strategically unachievable for rational players. Now, this means that, as Roger, the moral of the story is, if you want to hide your information, he should choose non-maximally entangled states around this region. In fact, if he chooses beta squared, such that it's 3/7 minus some small amount, he doesn't want to hit 3/7 exactly, otherwise he'll be in trouble. But if it's just let some small amount less, then he hides up to 6/7 of the information about the location of the treasure. In fact, when he plays the game in this region, Alice walks away with 2/7 of the treasure most of the time. Bob walks away with 2/7 of the treasure, and Roger can confidently expect to be richer than the pirates, which is odd, because first of all, he was stupid enough to bury his treasure in one of just four possible locations. Then two different individuals went to look on separate islands to try and find his treasure, and before they even went to look, he was unlucky enough to be forced to give them a perfect map of where the treasure was. So it's kind of remarkable that in that situation, you can nevertheless walk away from the situation with a smile on his face, being richer than the guys he's giving perfect information about his treasure to. It's kind of odd. This structure, this strange game theoretic structure to local data versus global data, is pretty stable too. You might imagine that the game has been set up in a very balanced way to get this critical point to occur perfectly. But that's not true. If you just change the parameters, if you perturb it in fairly simple manners, it actually doesn't destroy the structure. It generally enhances it. More complex games have more complex structure. So this is a slightly more complex game, which I won't go through, but it's simply created by adding a very small relative to the treasure cost to play the game for Alice and Bob, which is the cost of voyage to the islands, and a small cost to defect. And in this case, we can generate a game where the little classical strategy here is much worse than the quantum strategy. So the classical product states actually are much better for data hiding than the maximum entangled states in this case. We still get this gradual decline in the quality of the map as entanglement increases. There's this zone here, where it's actually not even worth the pirates playing. The pirates should refuse to look for this treasure, because the cost of voyage to look for it is too great relative to their chances of walking away with the money. And then there's this strange thing here, where rather than a sharp transition from defect to cooperate, we actually get a quantum hawk-dove game taking place. Now, a hawk-dove game is basically a situation where both pirates want to be the defector, but it's much better to be in a defect-cooperate situation than in a situation where both pirates are doing the same thing. So you want to be a defector, but if you know for a fact your opponent is going to defect, you grudgingly have to cooperate, because the off-diagonal the off-diagonal performance is so much better than the diagonal performance. You see what I mean? So there's no, the reason it's shaded is there is no game theoretic answer to that. There's no single answer to how these games work. Like they're bloodbaths. So if what Roger's motivation out of spite towards the pilots is to get them to fight one another, you need to give them a quantum hawk delphi. You might lose a bit more treasure than average, but the pirates would certainly have a very heated and drunken argument afterwards. In fact, this game defies strategic zones. It's got the standard classical zone over here. This zone is the standard prisoner's dilemma taking full effect here. This is the hawk dove region here. This region here is like the region we experienced before, where there's weak domination by cooperate strategies. But in this extreme region here, we get strong domination by cooperate strategies.
So what's the difference?
Weak domination, there's no advantage to abandoning the strategy of cooperate, so you don't. Strong domination, there's a stiff penalty for abandoning the strategy, so you down out there. So this is just to show that you can change these games up in all kinds of crazy ways, and this structure is preserved. What causes this kind of structure? What causes, as it were, this game theoretic security, in as much as it's security? And the answer is a trade-off, and into some of the features as being due to the trade-off between global and local information. If we plot the information available locally versus the amount of information available globally, as we vary the entanglement of the Bell states, we see that to start off with, obviously, we have local access to 2 bits, which drops down to 0 when all the information is stored in the correlations. But the amount of information available by lock when we study those correlations is only ever 1 bit. Now these lines intersect at the beta squared equals 1/3 point, which actually appears both in this as a strategic shift in this game and in the simpler game. So that explains some of these strategic shifts we're seeing. What it doesn't explain so much is this region, as it were, the interesting zone. And this is just me starting to speculate idly now. The origin of that zone seems to be local indistinguishability as opposed to perfect entanglement. Because if we measure the states where there's just as much entanglement, if not more, but no local indistinguishability, then that particular structure vanishes. And rather than having the data being exposed, we get perfect game theoretic security. In this case, the way I've set this up is to, instead of using qubits, use four-dimensional quantum systems, such that the four orthogonal maximally entangled states remain locally distinguishable. But only if you look at the correlations between itself, i.e. only if you cooperate, not if you defect. It's kind of odd that local indistinguishability is actually, in this sense, a resource that's of great benefit to Alice and Bob, who are trying to read the map, and a great hindrance to Roger, who's trying to hide information. The final speculation. One feature of quantum data hiding is that it falls down very quickly when they're shared entanglement among the parties. Specifically, if parties have quantum channels and they can perform global measurements on the system willy-nilly, and read out all the data that was encoded in the first place. So quantum channels break data hiding security. But they don't seem to break data game theoretic security nearly so easily. Because the obvious solution to Alice and Bob, when if they have a quantum channel, if they have a shared Bell state, for example, when set this game, is to teleport one of the qubits to the other ship, such that the map can be read perfectly. Then they could share that information and sail off and always steal the treasure, regardless of what Roger had done, even in the non-maximally entangled case. But they're never going to do that. They're never going to teleport one qubit from one ship to another. Because which pirate is going to be an idiot enough to teleport his qubit into the hands of his opponent? It's never going to happen. So it's not obvious to me, in this case, whether having a quantum channel is a significant advantage to Alison Bob. They're certainly going to have to do some very complicated, some kind of,
It's not that complicated. I think they can do a kind of distributed measurement.
That's what they have to do. They have to perform a measurement that's, in some sense, not locally biased.
Yeah, that, I don't think there's any problem with that. It's basically, I mean, you may need two Bell states instead of one Bell state, but it's not right. You do a controlled mod, bilateral controlled mods, one way and the other way, and you can measure, and then you get basically one EPR pair that's saying whether the same or different in the X basis, and one that says whether the same or different in the Z basis. So they can measure those locally, and then it's just a classification.
Okay. But of course, you can't do it with just one Bell state.
I'm not sure actually, because you have the original pair.
I think you can generate.
So that's destructive.
With that measurement, I think you can generate two. I think you can generate two. You can certainly generate more than one.
What do you mean?
Well, if you just look at, say, forget about the actual state, but look at the process they're doing, and ask starting on an arbitrary state, how much. What's the greatest difference in entanglement?
Yeah, on an arbitrary state, that's right. But in this case, they know that it's one of the null states. So I think they can, based on that, I think they actually can do it. They copy it in one basis.
They worry about the situation.
And then they measure it
in the original state. I think they can do it, but I think that they have to use more than one. The argument I was trying to make was that my name.
Right.
I just wanted to comment that something similar happens with respect to two-party cryptographic protocols, like beta commitment. Mm-hmm. So the result that beta commitment is impossible still goes through if you give the two parties additional time. So that's similar to the result you have.
Sure, except that I'm not claiming that this reason is secure. It's just secure against teleportation from qubit from A to B. Well, that's basically it for the description of simple protocol. The moral of the story is use normal atomic attendant states to hide your information. Thanks to this work. So, thank you very much. Yeah.
So, you could do almost the same thing, seems to me, using classical secret sharing. Obviously, you don't get the case where you have an LOCC bar that prevents them from getting everything. But you could do classical secret sharing. Now each person has two bits, and the XOR of each bit of the other person's bit gives you one of the bits in that.
That's right. If you can certainly simulate it classically as well if you allow. You want to give them an imperfect information.
Also. Right, right. So that's, so I was going to suggest that too.
Yeah, but the constraint early on in the game here, which is, well, it's one of the rules of the game, is that the pirates are so scary that they intimidate Watcher to actually enact a data mining routine.
So, okay, but even if you say that they have a perfect map, then you don't have to do the perfect secret strategy. So it seems like the same basic idea would hold I have to think about how the protocol would work, but I would imagine you could get a protocol where they each have some partial information, but then putting it together, they could get the whole information, rather, so it's not a perfect secret sharing anymore, because that assumes that each alone has no information. And so the fact that they have partial information tempts them to defect, right? That's kind of what's going on here.
Yeah, I agree.
So it seems like that part, at least, you could get the same in the classical, purely classical situation.
Sure. I mean, this is basically how I was taught as a study of the trade-offs that you get in entangled quantum states between locally available information and globally available information. But one thing to note about this protocol is there's no point at which, if this makes sense to say, there's any violation of local realism. Even though they're using maximum entangled states or pure entangled states, they're always just generating correlations with 0 and 1 measurements on two qubits in the two locations. So never are they doing anything which is going to not be modelable with local variance.
Just classically in game theory, there isn't always a solution to the. There isn't always an equilibrium if you use sort of non random strategies, but if you use random strategies, then you always use an equilibrium. Is that correct?
Yeah, that is one of the solutions to the whole graph.
So the hot dog, if you allow them to use sort of random strategies, then there would be a definite.
That's true. Okay, and it's pretty forward in that random case.
I mean, the hot dog thing does have natural equilibrium, even in the pure case, right? It's just there's two of them.
Exactly, and
that doesn't change when you add random strategies. There's still
there is an
more than one natural equilibrium.
There is an accepted solution to it, which is just basically half-half.
But it's the same payoff.
But what they can't do.
Well, no, it gives them, because there's some chance that they're going to be in the all half-halves, if you have half. Whether they just.
Well, if they do independent half-half, they're in trouble, yes, because they're
right.
Straight off.
Yeah, yeah.
Off out of the equilibrium zones. Doing. Trying to stay in the equilibrium zones whilst perfectly randomizing essentially involves somehow then coming up with a routine whereby they can share a random bit in a trustworthy fashion, which is difficult to do with sending.
Well, that's they have to take advantage of the finite speed of light. So.
More questions?
So, do you want to say more about how you expect to find the 3/7th? What was the characteristic of the 3/7th?
I can try. Because the interesting thing about the 3/7th is it turns up in both locations. It turns up in the simple game, and it, just like the 1/3, it's also preserved in the more complex game. I don't think it's inherently quantum in the sense that being something to do with the non-local properties of quantum states. It's very much a balance between local information and global information kind of thing. Essentially, the transition occurs. It's kind of difficult to explain. When they're presented with suddenly a raft of Nash equilibrium options at this threshold, where basically, they've got to reach a decision. When they've got imperfect information about which island to go to, they've got these four islands here. Some of them, say, after you've measured, have probability alpha squared of being the correct island. And others of them have probability beta squared of being the correct island. Now, obviously, alpha is larger than beta. So you individually would rather go and hunt one of the alpha squared islands. But if you've divided it such that you know for a fact that we're in the east of the Caribbean, the treasure is buried in the west of the Caribbean here, and you've also set up a Nash equilibrium by semaphore with Bob, such that you know Bob is going to visit the alpha squared island, you might be better off, when beta gets sufficiently high, abandoning that plan and preferring to have a smaller payoff and hunt for the beta squared island instead. Rather than going to the alpha squared and actually having to share. So those are the kind of issues these guys get confronted with. And at the 3/7th threshold, it reaches a point where all of a sudden one of the parties can, as it were, they profit maximally by having one of the parties force the other party to adopting a scheme that forces the other party to go to the beta square. And only by searching both islands, obviously, will they actually walk away with all the money, all the time. Hence the half-half that gets suddenly triggered. That's an inadequate explanation. I can explain it to you more fully in 5 minutes if you want.
Anything
No more questions?